to sing that our eyes are on the Lord, because the wind and waves still know his name. So we think of the disciples in the boat. Today we continue our series that we started last week about our emotions and how we feel, and today we connect through that emotion of fear, because sometimes we feel afraid. Have you felt afraid? Probably you have at some point in your life. So the question is, what are you afraid of? Is there a fear that's lingering, something in the back of your mind that keeps whispering to you, reminding you that it's there, something that strikes a fear in your heart? There are fears that we call phobias. A number of years ago, there was a movie called Arachnophobia that helped us all learn the fancy word for I'm afraid of spiders. And if you watched that movie, then you came out of it probably more afraid of spiders than before, because in the movie there were spiders that could like leap across the room, and they were creepy. Oh my gosh, they were super creepy, right? There's also another one. This one's fascinating to me. It is arachibutyrophobia. You know what that one is? It's the fear of peanut butter sticking to the roof of your mouth. I am not making that up. You can look it up. It has a whole long name. I'm not sure. Did anyone have that? The fear of peanut butter? I don't know why it got defined, because I've not met a person that suffers from the fear of peanut butter sticking to the roof of your mouth. Now, we have the experience of peanut butter sticking to the roof of our mouths, probably, unless you've never eaten it, but most of us have had it and had that, you know, thing happen. But I know where the milk is, so I'm not afraid of the peanut butter, right? But it's defined as a phobia. How many remember that show Fear Factor? We have a fear factor in our lives. We remember that TV show. It's aired like in the beginning, maybe around 2000 or so, for like 6 years. Joe Rogan was the host, and they had the fear factor, which was mostly kind of the disgusting factor, because he would tell him, okay, now for this round, here's what you have to do. Eat this. And sometimes it was like live bugs. We were at the A's game last weekend. They have crickets now. I didn't order any, but you can. Are they fried or how? Carrie told me about them, so I figured you had a plate or container. Just saw a sign of them. You can order crickets at the Oakland A's game. I don't know where they're getting the crickets. Maybe that's why there's not as many crickets like singing at night now. They're selling them at the A's game. I don't know. But that was what Fear Factor was like. It was eating weird or gross things, or having like bugs crawling on your face, things like that. What I learned when I was thinking about this and looking for the image of Fear Factor and the logo or whatever, MTV has revived that. So if you're not familiar with Fear Factor, you can catch it if you have MTV. If you want to remember what Fear Factor is like, and you don't want to look it up on probably YouTube, I would imagine you can find clips of it. But now there's a new one, and Ludacris is the host. So some people know who that is. If you don't know who he is, then you can ask your grandkids probably. They'll know. Anyway, some fears that we have make sense. We fear things because of our experience. How many people have a fear of needles because of experience with needles, right? So you go to the doctor and they tell you, well, we're going to give you a shot for that. Do you look at the needle or do you not look at the needle? See, most of the time I don't look, because I don't want to see it, because it always looks this long and this big around, right? It looks enormous. Unless they say, oh, this is just a little tiny one. And then I'll look over and sometimes it's just this little, okay, give me that right there. I had allergy shots as a kid, so I've had a lot of needles, right? But still, I'm not a fan. I don't know anybody that's like, ooh, sign me up, right? I'll have a shot, sure. Why not? So we're afraid of needles. Sometimes, though, I mean, it's not just like hurtful things in a physical sense. Some people have a fear of commitment because you've been in a relationship and you got hurt before, you got burned. And so fearing commitment is something a lot of people have just from the experience of the hurt. So in a similar way, needles hurt. Fear needles. Commitment has hurt in the past. Fear that. Other fears that we have are because of common sense. people have the fear of heights. Why? Because falling hurts. It's not really the fall, it's the sudden stop. That's what I've heard. So if you can see that picture, yeah, that's making a little nervous that those kids are going to just topple over, right? So we have this fear of high places or heights, and there are people who can't even, you know, go out on that ledge and look over because of that paralyzing fear. Other experience or common sense kind of fear is the fear of bears. Like, it makes sense to be afraid of bears. They're large animals. A number of years ago, our church in Ohio, so this is probably like 20 years ago, we had a men's retreat. We went to a camp and we stayed overnight, and so we had a campfire, and we're just there and we're hanging out, we're talking. And there was a guy who joined us, this big guy. He had been like on a path where he could have been an Olympic weightlifter. So those are large people, right? Strong. And he was, you know, tall and broad-shouldered and muscular, just this bodybuilder-looking guy. And so we're talking for a while, and he shares an experience about wrestling a bear. And I thought, why would you do that? I mean, you're big and you're strong. Okay, I get it. And the bear was muzzled, I think, so it wasn't going to bite him. But the bear still has these large, powerful paws, right? And so he talked about how strong the bear was and how the bear like hit him and how much the impact was. And I thought, it's a bear. Like, you don't wrestle bears. You look at bears in the zoo, and there's a reason why there's like the fence and the moat and the place, and you can't go in there because it's dangerous. It's a bear. Be afraid. Be very afraid. So some fears make sense, but other fears are irrational. I've heard fear described this way: false expectations appearing real. Have you ever heard that? It's an acronym. False expectations appearing real. If you're nearby somebody and you have an irrational fear that has plagued you, turn to a person near you, and if you're willing, this is not a requirement, but if you're willing, share your irrational fear. Something that's, this is the interactive part, so go ahead. So who wants to point to somebody nearby and say, this person's afraid of... Probably not. Because that involves public speaking, and we're all kind of afraid of that. So the fear of spiders might become irrational, because there are some spiders that are creepy and scary and poisonous, but then all spiders get lumped into that category. Same thing with snakes. How many are afraid of snakes? A lot of us have this, oh, yeah, they're kind of creepy. We have this friend, her name is Sandy. We've known her for more than 25 years, I think. Sandy is like super freaked out by snakes. If she were in this room and we put that picture on the screen, she would probably get up and go, or at least move toward the back wall. She's fully aware, because she's a smart person, that it's a two-dimensional projected image of a snake. It is not real. It cannot come off of the screen and get to her. But she still would be totally freaked out. She just has this total phobia of snakes, including pictures of snakes. She just gets all creeped out, right? Why? Well, there's snakes that are poisonous, and so therefore maybe all snakes get lumped into the same category. In 2010, we were in Oregon, and we were actually surprised that Gina would grab salamanders out of the river where we were, and here's proof that she did it, because salamanders are a little bit, I mean, they're like snakes with arms, right? Practically. Isn't it similar tail and, you know, just shorter, a little bit, they're kind of slimy too, but there she was walking around the, you know, on the rocks holding these salamanders. Same kid, though, if there's a snake in the, or not snake, a spider in the bathroom, then she's, you know, I don't know, Dad. Go take care of the spider. Some of our fears are irrational. How many times do we fear the diagnosis? Have you feared a diagnosis? So maybe you kind of hesitate to go get that checked out because you maybe aren't sure you want to know. I have fallen into that category where I'm not sure if I want to have that test done. I don't know if I want to know how high my cholesterol might be. Shh, don't tell Paula. She'll want me to get it checked. No matter what we're afraid of, we know that fear influences our actions. Sometimes we flee from danger. And a lot of times that's important to do. This past week with this storm, you know, approaching the East Coast and all the warnings that were there and the super cool animation that the Weather Channel had. Did you see images of that where they showed what the floodwater was going to look like? It was fascinating stuff. But so they were telling people, they were warning people, and they were like, get out. And they changed the direction of the interstate. This is a picture of it, so that people could be on both sides getting away from the storm. That's important. When there's imminent danger and we have the opportunity to get away from it, it's helpful. It makes sense. You know, we look at the people who are like, no, I'm going to hold out through this storm. You know, I've been here for this long, and I'm just going to take my stand against nature. Okay, you're kind of a crazy person, right? It's coming. It's going to be bad. Go away. We flee from our fears and the things we're afraid of, and sometimes that's very smart to do. But fear can also make us freeze. I remember being a number of years ago, I traveled a lot. My family traveled a lot when I was a kid. And so I got to go a lot of places. I grew up in Ohio, so Kentucky was very close. And so there's a place called Natural Bridge in Kentucky, and this is a picture of it. It's this very large stone arch. And it's probably 20 feet wide and maybe 65 feet in the air. And so you can go there and go to the park that's there, and you can walk across Natural Bridge. And OSHA has not come along and put rails on the sides of Natural Bridge, surprisingly, right? But you can walk across this thing. So we did. We were there, and we visited, and we walked across. And we were coming back, and I was in the middle, like halfway between the safe places, right? And I was in the middle, halfway between the sides, and I was like, I felt like I could not move. I remember this distinctly. I was probably like Drew's age. He's 10. I was probably like that old, and I just got stuck. I was in the middle of the thing. I couldn't move. I think I sat down, and I didn't feel like I could even move forward. I felt like if I took a step, the thing was going to crumble. It's like, you can see how thick it is. A 10-year-old boy is not going to break that. But I was stuck. I was paralyzed by that fear. Maybe you've been there where fear has just made you feel stuck. So we might flee, we might freeze, we might want to hide from the things we're afraid of. In Judges chapter 6, which was our Old Testament reading today, there was a story of Gideon, and Gideon was afraid. This is what it says in verse 11. Gideon was beating out wheat in the wine press to hide it from the Midianites. Now, as we read that, we might not be struck by that as a strange thing to do, but it just doesn't work. It was not the place to beat out wheat. Beating out wheat means separating the wheat kernels from the chaff. So wheat, you can probably picture, it grows up with a long kind of grassy stem part, and then has the wheat kernels at the top in that part that's there, right? And so when it was harvested, they would cut it all from about the ground level, and they would stack it up and dry it out. And once it was dry, then the way to separate, because none of us wants to eat the chaff part, that's cattle feed or for the bottom of the pen or whatever. So in order to separate it, they would beat it out, which meant to kind of pound it so the kernels would separate. But then you have to, like, throw it up in the air, and the wind blows to take the chaff downwind, and the seed, because it's heavier, stays around and drops down to where you are. So if you're, but this is what a wine press looks like. So the wine press is like a hole in the ground. That's where Gideon was beating out the wheat. That is not the place to do it. That's a wine press. What's that for? You take all the grapes, you throw them in the big hole. It's a giant bucket. And then you stomp on them, right? Still is the way wine is made, where you put them in some kind of container. This is the container. This is where Gideon was. Why? Because he was afraid. He was afraid of these people called the Midianites. They were enemies of God's people. So Israel would grow all the wheat. They'd plant it. They'd cultivate it. They'd, you know, take care of it. They'd make sure it probably had water or whatever. They'd get to the end of the season. They'd harvest it. They'd dry it out. They'd do all the work. And then the Midianites would watch for the chaff going up and down. There they are. Let's go take their wheat. And they would come and they would take it. So Gideon was like, I don't want our crop, our harvest, to be taken by these Midianites. So I'm going to do it in a place that maybe isn't the best place, but because of fear, that's where he was. He was afraid of the Midianites. He was afraid of losing their harvest. He was struck by this fear. Now, we can hide in our times of fear, but we can also turn to God in our fears. There's a cliche, there's no atheists in foxholes. Maybe that's familiar. That means when the pressure is on and the bullets are flying overhead, that's sometimes when people turn to God. In our study of Jonah that we've had during Bible class time for the last several weeks, today we talked about when are people most receptive to what God might be doing. And the answer was in crisis, right? When there's a crisis, when things aren't going well, when it, you know, might be medical, it might be literal foxhole time, it might be something else, it might be financial, whatever it is. That when there's a crisis, that's when we might be more receptive. We might turn to God. That's where sometimes we go. The disciples were in the boat with Jesus. And they turn to God. They turn to Jesus because he's right there, right? Jesus is right there in the boat with the disciples. And in our fears, in our lives, God is with us. God is with us. So God found Gideon in the wine press. Gideon wasn't looking for God. He was hiding there. And note the greeting. Oh, mighty man of valor. That's how the angel of the Lord. It's a little bit confusing because first it's the angel of the Lord and then it says the Lord turned to Gideon. So God's right there. Greetings, oh, mighty man of valor. To the man who's there in the wine press, kind of peeking out, hiding, but that's where God found him. And then Gideon asks questions we might consider. How is this happening? Right? Now, here's where Gideon and that story fits in the narrative of Israel. They've come into the land that was promised. They've conquered most of it. But they're living among other people. So the Midianites and the Jebusites and the Mosquito Bites and the... Caught that. Good. So they're there, and so there's these other people around. And Israel would do really well and be connected to God for a time, but then you know what happened? They felt good and successful. And what sometimes happens for people who are feeling good and successful? The need for God wanes, right? So the need for God would wane, and they would kind of wander off the path, and God would allow them to go. And so then for a time, they would be on their own, and they would feel like God had abandoned them. Well, who moved, right? They did. They moved further away from God, and then God let them go for a time and then would intervene and reconnect. And so this is how he's choosing to do it, through Gideon. But Gideon has some questions for God. How is this happening? We heard these words in verse 13. If the Lord is with us, why then has all this happened to us? And where are all his wonderful deeds that our fathers recounted to us, saying, did not the Lord bring us up from Egypt? But now the Lord has forsaken us. Gideon was feeling alone and afraid and forsaken by God, like God didn't really even notice or care. And then his second question is this: how can I overcome? God said, go in this strength. And the answer to that, how can I overcome? Well, this is what he says. Please, Lord, how can I save Israel? Behold, my clan is the weakest in Manasseh, and I am the least in my father's house. Gideon is far from confident, but the answer to that is, I am sending you. I am with you, and I am sending you into this mission that might strike fear in his heart. Go and save Israel from the Midianites. And Gideon's like, I can't even separate the wheat from the chaff. How can I save Israel, this whole nation? But the answer wasn't in Gideon. The answer was in who was with him. It was God himself. So God found Gideon in the wine press, and Jesus was in the boat. Talk about being in the presence of God. There's Jesus in the boat. But what does it say he's doing? He's asleep. Here's a picture of it. But I'm going to tell you, it's not a very good picture of it. And here's why. It says he's asleep in the stern, but that's not the stern, right? Doesn't it look like the boat's going that way? Either way, in the first service, Jim Lynch told me that that would be called a cuddy cabin. And so that's what in the picture. But that's not how, this is probably not what the boat looked like. It was probably a simple fishing kind of boat that there was no under level kind of place. It was just all one. And the word that's translated cushion gives us the idea that it's a comfortable kind of place. Probably not. These boats were not built for the comfort. They were built for the job of fishing. And so the word that's translated cushion is in the rear of the boat, it would have been wooden or possibly covered in leather, a place for the person who was steering, the helmsman, also from Jim Lynch, to steer the boat. So he would have the rudder, right? And to be able to steer the boat, there was a place to sit. It wasn't a comfy place. It was a functional cushion. I don't know why we translate it cushion. Bench would probably be better, right? But that's where Jesus was, and he had fallen asleep. So he either sat down on it or next to it and put his head on it or whatever, but he was asleep. But think about this. There is a storm and this mighty wind there on the sea and water is coming into the boat. Who isn't bothered? Jesus. The disciples are completely freaking out by this experience. They wake up Jesus. What's their question? Do you not care that we are drowning here? That's kind of a close translation of it. Are you paying attention, Jesus? There's this storm going on. What are you doing sleeping? Jesus is like, okay. Why are you so afraid? Because he's there in the boat with the disciples. And he can take action that changes their course. God is near to us too. He's near to us. There's something calming about the presence of a parent. I bet Kennedy already does that. She cries, doesn't she? And when she cries and you pick her up, what happens? She continues to cry. No, she stops. Sometimes she'll continue to cry, right? Because you're not reading her mind. And she wants to tell you, no, I'm hungry, right? Or it's my diaper, right? Yep. But there's something calming about the presence of the parent. Do you remember that from when you were a kid? Most of us have that experience that we can share. That mom or dad just being there made a difference. Just being there to say it's okay. Or to, what is it about, you know, mom kissing the scraped knee that makes it all better, right? That's why I chose that photo of the hand of the father holding the hand of the child. That's like our relationship with God. God holds us like a parent to a child. God comforts us. God is with us. So then even if our fears are rational or irrational, that God is there for us. That he comes to us in his spirit, that he calms our fears and calms our storms and gives us comfort. What are you afraid of? And then in our lives, as we grow in him, faith displaces fear. We can be filled with fear, but as we are filled further with faith, faith will displace that fear. Luther said this in the Catechism, fear and love God. We fear and love God in the explanation to the Ten Commandments. Here's the commandment, and what does this mean? We fear and love God. The fear of God is the beginning of wisdom. We don't fear God like we fear spiders or bears or heights or needles or commitment or anything else that we might fear. We fear God in an awe and respect and an honor and a glory way. We don't fear God because he's unknown. We fear God because he is known. We fear God because of his power and his might and his majesty. It doesn't create that same kind of fear, but we fear God out of love and honor and respect toward him. So now instead of fears of the unknown or of the future, we can fear our God. The last words in the gospel reading were these. They were filled, they meaning the disciples, were filled with great fear and said to one another, who then is this that even the wind and the sea obey him? That's not a question of who is this guy, right? They already know, but they're becoming aware of his power. So they're asking the question in an awe and a respect, and they're fearing in that way. As faith displaces fear, we can step out in faith. Gideon was called out from the wine press, fearful and timid to be a leader among his people. He led the people of God against the Midianites, and he did it God's way, and they were successful. The disciples continually took steps of faith with Jesus. They grew in faith and they changed the world by the power of the Spirit. So what fears do you have? What fears do we share? What is God calling us toward is another question. What is God calling us to do? Where is he calling us to go? Martin Luther King Jr. said this, faith is taking the first step even when you don't see the whole staircase. How many times do we want to know the whole process, everything that might happen, all the variables, all the contingencies, all the unknown little details before we take that first step, make that first move? Many times we want to know what's going to happen. But until we step, we won't. We can't. God calls us to step out in faith into the unknown and to live boldly, to face our fears and overcome. Overcoming might not mean overcoming your fear of heights and jumping out of a perfectly good airplane. But I chose that picture just to demonstrate the boldness and the courage with which we can face life in Christ. That we can step out into the unknown. We might be clinging to the inside of the plane, white-knuckled, like, I don't want to go. But God's calling us to step out there. And faith is our parachute. Trusting that he's going to catch us and not let us fall. We have to take that bold step of faith into something we might not know. Yes, sometimes we feel fear. But God is with us. He will not leave us, and he will not let us fall. Amen.